Faster than a struggling turtle. More powerful than Gary Rosen.
Oh, I can't believe that.
Able to leap tall juggalos in a single bound. Look, down on the ground.
It's a germ.
It's a worm.
It's 508.
Bursting from the subterranean depths of Wormtown like the mighty Shai Hulud, it's 508.
A show about Worcester.
It's May the 10th, 2019. This is 508, a show about Worcester. I am Michael Benedetti, and this is Brendan Malikan. Hi, Brendan. How are you doing?
I'm shaking, brother.
Brendan, we have a lot of news that we could talk about on the 508 show today. We have municipal election news, culture news, church news, transportation news, recycling news, environmental news, Midtown Mall news, economic news, commodities news, drug news, and culture news. I guess I said culture news twice. That's how much culture news we have.
So much culture.
I want to start off with municipal election news because May the 14th is the last day to submit the signatures that you need to get on the Worcester election ballot. And since last week's show, we've seen two people pull papers to enter the race. Peter Stefan, Worcester legend and funeral home director, intends to run at large, and Roger Frost intends to run in District 6. So we would have two challengers in District 5, one challenger in District 3, and no challengers in Districts 1, 2, or 4. It just seems weird to me. It just seems weird to me that there's, in a year where there seems to be a lot of election interest, there's just this one part of the race that doesn't have interest. I mean, I understand it. I'm not chiding people. I'm not saying that people need to run.
I'm personally just thrilled that there's so much interest in people being my elected official in the city of
Worcester.
People
love District 5.
It's beautiful.
Ever since Gary Rosen was no longer... He's not your district counselor anymore, right? He's an at-large
counselor. He's at-large, yeah.
Ever since Gary Rosen...
He ran out of combs.
You know, Brendan, in culture news, Worcester resident Katie Burt, who sometimes comes on this show to talk about pop culture or hockey, is on this week's episode of the big-time pop culture podcast The Incomparable, talking about the new Avengers movie.
Which is fantastic.
The Avengers Final Vengeance. So good job, Katie. She's actually used the same microphone that we're using to tape this show, the same microphone that I think you hit the other second.
Oh, sorry about that.
Yeah.
Katie had a piece on, what's the blog that she wrote, Den of Geek?
She writes for Den of Geek.
She had a piece up this week talking about discussing grief in Avengers Endgame.
Yes.
It was one of the most stellar pop culture pieces I think I've read in a long time. It almost made me feel bad. I saw Katie the day after I read it in the neighborhood, and I actually ignored her because I didn't want to waste too much of her precious time discussing that piece. It was fantastic.
I still haven't read that.
That's because you're a terrible friend.
Well, no, it's because normally I have no respect for spoilers, and I ask Katie to spoil everything for me because Katie always gets to watch movies and things early. And I'm always
have you still not seen Endgame?
Give me the most. I tried to watch the Avengers. Almost Endgame the other day. What's it called? Infinity War? I had a hard time, man. It was like watching a Godard movie in that I was like, I know that there's a lot of talent and a lot of focus that is being put into the people, the filmmakers here doing a certain exact thing they want to do.
Yeah.
But it's not a thing which is aimed at me, so I'm just sort of befuddled by the whole thing.
I think it is aimed at you. I think you just don't appreciate how spot on it is.
I think it's the focus of it. I think that, I mean, obviously the Avengers movie thing is basically like a 22 episode television series or whatever,
sure.
Right? But like more than most television series, like every episode is trying to do so much that instead of like, you know, traditionally you start the television show off with several minutes explaining the premise of the show every time.
Mm-hmm.
Or at least you spend a while trying to convince the audience that Lucille Ball or Jerry Seinfeld are charming and that you should care about their trials and travails. But in these Avengers movies, I feel like are moving so fast and are trying to get so much done emotionally, plot-wise, thematically, that like they just don't have that beat. There's just not that beat in Avengers Penultimate Vengeance or whatever it was called, where they're like, this is why you should care about Tony Stark. They're like, you definitely care about him. Or the emotional beat of like, this is why Thor cares about Loki. Like, I've seen multiple Avengers movies with Thor and Loki in them, and I was pretty sure that Thor hated Loki, but then Loki dies and Thor goes, no!
So you're not wrong at all, and I think I've said this to you before, I know that people will laugh at this because it is kind of silly, but I think it's spot on and true. That's why you got
to
see.
I need to watch all of them.
You need to watch all the movies. Yes. And it is important from a perspective of appreciating how deep they've gone in terms of just narrative. And it would be like tuning in for the Battle of Helm's Deep and trying to like wonder why are the what's going,
you can't watch the third Lord of the Rings, and I understand this, and I, you know,
not even just the one battle, right? Like, yeah, it wouldn't make any sense. They're, you know, they covered all that backstory, and one of the things they did well was, I think, with this franchise, was not getting so in the weeds of individual character backstory. It kind of all came together as things went along. Like, that was one of the things they stopped doing, was after Iron Man, was like the
origin story.
It was no origin stories. Like, they just kind of take for granted you kind of know this person exists.
Big green guy. Who knows who he is? You got to figure it out.
You got to figure it out on your own.
The Midtown Mall was sold this week for $4 million, somewhat less than its assessed value, to Felicio Lana, who owns a bunch of properties, including the ones adjacent to the mall.
Mm-hmm.
The mall has for years now been threatened with eminent domain. The powers that be believing the owners were running it like weird, reclusive slumlords instead of people with an eye on future economic opportunities in downtown Worcester. I don't know if the new owners will make them any happier. They'll probably be easier to get a hold of.
Well, what's interesting, though, is that, and this isn't so much reading between the lines, but what's been explicitly said in press, unless I'm misreading, is that, you know, the eminent domain conversation doesn't actually appear to be over, right?
Right. They're like, we could still do it.
Because the reason this sale seems to have happened so quickly was the WRA gave the owners a 30-day timeline to come up with a financial turnaround plan, right, for the mall, either financially yourself or with somebody else. They seem to have done that via a purchase and sale agreement, but they still haven't shown it to the WRA. And the WRA still seems to have great interest in what's going to happen here. Like, if this owner turns around and says, well, I bought it for $4 million, and to be honest with you, this building is my ideal building. Like, the way it is right now, this is what I've always dreamed a building to look like. I'm going to guess that somebody at the WRA is going to turn around and say, yeah, that's not going to work for us.
Well, maybe it buys them some time. You know, Brendan, let's talk about what you think is maybe the big story of the week, which is church news.
Church news.
Last week in Worcester, church news was church demolition news, and this week it's church rap video news. Worcester native Joiner Lucas.
What a bizarro timeline this is in Worcester.
Or, as everybody I knew who knew him growing up in Worcester called him, Gary, shot a video for his song Devil's Work in St. Peter's Church in Maine South, my church.
Mm-hmm.
In the video, he wanders around the nave of the church wearing a hat, holding a giant Bible in one hand and a giant bottle of alcohol in the other hand, and prays for a bunch of celebrities to die.
Hmm.
Monsignor Scollin, the pastor of St. Peter's, has said he was on vacation while all this was happening and that they misunderstood what they were agreeing to when they agreed to let the video be filmed in the church. I'm a longtime member of the parish, and I'm not happy about this. It is a mildly trashy video, and it's in a space that I feel like is not supposed to be an even mildly trashy space.
Yeah.
But what do you think?
So St. Peter's is, I guess, technically my family's parish. That's my family's all Maine South, so that's Monsignor Scollins. Unfortunately, I usually only get to see him at weddings and funerals
these days,
but he is a fantastic human being. Yeah, I totally disagree. I think it was an incredible use of the space. I thought, and that parish is absolutely gorgeous. I love the.
They really make it look great in the video too.
Yeah,
like,
no,
it's not a bad looking church, but it looks great in that video.
It looks absolutely fantastic, and the lighting was.
They don't show the carpeting because the carpeting is kind of dingy, and I feel like that's what brings the space down.
Carpeting in a church is very similar to carpeting in a restaurant. That's like, you don't want that.
Yeah.
Look, I kind of get it, everyone's complaints, it's funny, right? Because you don't want to be critical of somebody's beliefs if they're originating from a position of faith. But everyone who was quoted in the story, it seemed more they were being critical from a position of being a cranky old person who just basically, because they were all starting out by saying, I hate hip hop, right?
Yes.
Like the argument really seemed to be like they dislike the taste in music.
I don't think that was it.
No?
I think the argument was that you have a video where a guy's praying for a bunch of people to die.
No, he wasn't, though. So you didn't listen to the video.
I did listen to the video. What was he praying for in the video?
He was asking a question.
He was asking, why don't you?
Why do all these good people keep... And I think it's a valid question for anybody who claims to have a faith in a higher power and an omniscient...
Why does Don Henley live and Red Fox die?
For anyone who believes in an omniscient, omnipotent, and benevolent God, I think that's a fair question to ask, right? Is like, why do all these seemingly wonderful people end up dying horrible, tragic deaths while they're young in life, and these seemingly horrible, atrocious human beings thrive and benefit in this bizarro timeline that we live in?
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, I listened to it a couple times. One, the beat's fantastic. I'm just trying to figure out who put together the beats for this one, because I know Joiner, Gary, does use some local producers for some of his beats in the past, but that one was incredible. And but beyond that, it was like, I don't know. I thought it was actually another great track from local hip-hop artist, and we should be really proud of that. I don't know. And I think the setting was fantastic. I don't know, maybe they should have upped the budget and used a, you know, built a fake church, right?
Well, like, you know,
I don't know. That's
I feel like, so let me just characterize this argument as saying, this is not the worst thing that's happened in the nave of that church. And, like, this is not some great crime. Mm-hmm. Somebody made a video that I find tacky or whatever.
Yeah.
Or even that somebody did something inappropriate in a church. It's not uncommon, and it's not, like, a great crime. And,
sure.
Like, nobody, you know. The miscommunication, I think, I honestly do think that, like, if anybody had given anybody in a leadership position of the church, like, the lyrics to this song or played the track for them, mm-hmm. they would have been like, you know, good luck to you, but, like, this is not the kind of thing that we're about. And that's, I think that that's the only thing. To me, that's, I mean, you know, that's the, I mean, I guess that all, even the bishop was complaining about hip-hop. I don't know why any of these guys go off message like that.
It's like, seriously, somebody, stay on your islands, guy.
Says, if somebody says, do you like hip-hop? You say, yeah, I like some hip-hop. You know,
whatever, yeah.
Like, whatever, you know, Run DMC.
Great.
Come out at night, whatever.
It just sounded like a bunch of old guys complaining about their taste in music.
Well, I want to talk about the things that made me think about. I want to talk about other unconventional church-based videos, specifically the opening of Boondock Saints, Joe Perry reads you the church announcements, and the West Wing episode, The Two Cathedrals.
All right.
And this reminded me unfavorably of the Boondock Saints.
Mm-hmm.
And also, I feel like it was not done as well as the West Wing episode, Two Cathedrals, either. In the sense that, like, when I'm looking at this guy and I'm like, here's a guy, he's in the sanctuary, he's in the nave of the church. That's mm-hmm. the audience area of the church. And he's just kind of walking around. He's not, like, genuflecting. He's not, like, moving like a person moves in a church. So there's no reference to that aspect of the thing.
Yeah.
It's just like, he might as well be in a nice park.
Sure.
It's just a nice background.
Except he's having a conversation with God. And I think a lot of people would say that, like, you know, that's the venue.
So he's got this giant bottle of alcohol he's walking around with. Somehow he's gotten into this church in the middle of the day. It's unclear why this is. I guess there's a mass funeral going on. Although there's also a lot of shots that make it seem like maybe
isn't
he's just
St. Peter's open during the day?
Funeral.
For a break?
You can't. So there's some churches that are open during the day, but most churches are not open during the day. Yeah, because otherwise random people with giant bottles of alcohol would be wandering into them.
God forbid somebody come in and try and pray or something. I know. Jeez.
You should be always praying. I mean, they're open a lot of the time. They're open a lot of the time, and the churches have chapels and things that are open, but you can't just wander into St. Peter's in the middle of the day. No. If you show up for Mass early, you can't even get into St. Peter's. I'll tell you this, at least. This is, I mean, I've not really ever tried to go in there in the middle of the day. I've tried to get to go to Mass early when it's been locked. So it's like, and also he's like wearing this hat in the whole video, which to me is like, again, is like, it's, if you're somebody who like grew up in this church or, you know, like, or are, again, in some sort of ecclesiastical mindset, you're just, like, not wearing the hat in church. Or if you are, it's for some specific reason. And this, to me, is the thing that I feel like there's no acknowledgement of this as a particularly sacred space. Again, it might as well just be, like, a nice, you know, a nice park or a nice chapel in the woods with a nice little cross in the corner or something that he's praying to. So I would say, for example, in the West Wing episode of The Two Cathedrals, this is the one where President Bartlett puts out a cigarette on the floor of the National Cathedral as a statement against of anger towards God.
Mm-hmm.
And apparently, a National Cathedral, actual Episcopal Cathedral, apparently actually did not expect this kind of a thing to happen as part of this shoot, and really restricted people shooting stuff after that.
Sure.
But this is something where it's like, you know where President Bartlett's coming from faith-wise, you know his history with church spaces, mm-hmm. so you get why he is very pointedly lighting up in church and putting out the cigarette on the floor of the church. Like, you get what that's about.
Yeah.
This is one where you're like, you don't get why he's doing this totally unchurchy stuff in this church. Like, what's his history with this church? What is the situation here? What's the scenario? It's just being used as a background, and it's not taking, so it's just sort of using it in a cheap way. You know, I also
have a completely different take on that.
So I also, I'll say,
I think that's beautiful.
I'll also compare it, say, to the beginning of the Boondock Saints. You've mm-hmm. probably seen the Boondock Saints
a million times. Fantastic film.
I hate the Boondock Saints. I've only ever seen the first hour of the Boondock Saints. So
and the church
possible.
Scene is one of the best scenes imaginable.
Right, so the church scene of Boondock Saints is the beginning scene where there is this some sort of bizarre liturgy going on mm-hmm. in what is obviously not a Catholic church, but it's intended to be a Catholic mm-hmm. liturgy. It is in fact a Methodist church, and they make no attempt to rearrange anything, move the pulpit, do anything
sure.
to make it look like a Catholic church. They don't say the Our Father the way that you say it during a Catholic liturgy, mm-hmm. and that's what they're saying. So this is like the thing which, again, like if you've ever gone to a Catholic church or a Catholic or were ever Catholic for 1 year of your life, you're watching this and you're like, what is going on?
Mm-hmm.
This makes no sense liturgically. basically. Like, obviously the creators of this do not care about the Catholic liturgy, do not care about the Catholic faith. Mm-hmm. They just want something cool, which is fine. But then why are you spending so much time on it? I sort of feel like this is like, if you don't care about martial arts, great. Don't have a martial arts scene in your movie. Or if you do, make it short and get it over with. Don't have some sort of a bunch of stuff about martial arts in your movie if you don't care about it.
Mm-hmm.
And that, to me, is unlike the two cathedrals episode of The West Wing, is one where you're just like, I don't get where these guys are connected to in Catholicism. There's definitely plenty of parts of Catholicism that you could connect your desire to be a gangster assassin to.
Yeah.
There's definitely, I mean, right? I mean, there's plenty of like death cults that like the Mexican drug cartels are into that have a lot of roots in Catholicism.
Sure.
You could have all kinds of crazy stuff like that in this movie if you want to. And set it in Boston, great, you got me sold. They don't do any of that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. They don't even know what religion they're in. So the third thing I would compare this to is the short film Joe Pera Reads You the Church Announcements from Joe Pera Talks to You, I think is the name of the show on Adult Swim. You ever see this?
No.
He reads the church announcements for the second Sunday of Advent, and they do this in also an Episcopal church, I believe, up in Milwaukee, and they have the right number of Advent candles lit,
mm-hmm.
and they like have the right amount of awkwardness of the person reading the church bulletin announcements in the church. And I think it's not intended to be Catholic. I think it is intended to be Episcopal. But to me, it just strikes this note, this perfect note. So it's the kind of thing that, like, if you don't go to church a lot, you're like, great, here's a guy being weird in church.
Mm-hmm.
This is hilarious. And if you're somebody who does go to church a lot or has gone to church in your life, you look at it and you're like, oh, that's so true.
Right.
Oh, that's so familiar. Like, this is, again, this is like a martial arts movie made by people who care about martial arts.
Except in this case, I don't think there was any intent necessarily to focus on Catholicism. The
yes.
fact that it was.
Oh, definitely not. So I'm
I mean,
not,
you're,
I'm not,
you're able
so
to view it
what
from
what I'm
the,
saying is, yeah, this could be, it, he could, this video could be pretending this is a Baptist church. This video could be pretending this
yeah.
is a whatever. I just feel like I don't know why he's being so weird in a sacred space. I don't need a backstory for Jordan Lucas'
no,
character.
I know.
I just needed some sort of visual acknowledgement.
But there's also some stuff that's in that in the video that again that I think you can be fairly critical of, but also acknowledge our like real thing, like the bottle of Hennessy, right? Like drinking while mourning is not a rare thing. Like
no,
anyone who
not.
Says that
it's
is
not.
Like a rare thing is a, again, has never mourned, right? That's
yes.
like what you're saying about like Boondock Saints. Like you've clearly never been to a Catholic mass. Like when my father passed away, I literally ran out of pockets from all of the flasks that had been tucked into my coat and my pants from people who were, and I'd never experienced this before because I
yes.
never lost a parent, but like, it was every other person who came up to me while giving me a hug managed to secretly slide like a flask of whiskey
right.
into different parts of my body. So I was like, yeah, I get that. Like the Hennessy might seem like, oh, geez, you're drinking in church. Yeah. And,
I mean, I obviously,
and one, if you are Catholic,
right.
you should be drinking in church because
yeah.
that's one of your major sacraments right there.
Obviously, this is not him supposed to be going in there being super
yeah.
sanctimonious or anything. And this is why he's going in there wearing his hat,
yeah,
carrying,
I think
wielding his Bible, carrying his bottle of alcohol.
And just on a very basic level, I think it is fair from a, whether it be a pop culture perspective or maybe it's something that like, you know, I was at a First Communion last week, and whenever we get to the part about the mystery of faith, that's always the thing that that's why I don't go to church anymore. Like, cause I'm too old for mysteries, right? Like that's
yeah.
for some grade school stuff. I don't have time for it. Like I like logical explanations for things, and I think a lot of the stuff that again dismiss it because it's pop culture or you don't like the style of music. Having an adult conversation about some of the unfairness in society where some like really, really great people end up getting they're murdered unnecessarily young in life while we live in a society that seems to celebrate terrible people thriving. And this is just my own perspective as well, too. But we do see from time to time, especially during times of war, not all, but some parishes within even our diocese here in Worcester seem to take a very supportive position when it comes to war and atrocities that affect other people as well, too.
Yeah,
so
sure.
I do think that it is fair to use the Catholic Church as a backdrop for that as well.
Yeah.
Because it's,
although this parish is about the most social justice-y parish.
100%. Yeah.
There.
No, 100%. I mean, and that's why I was clear when I said that was my, that's like my family parish, because that was the point of origin for us when my family first came to Worcester, but
yes.
The parish I grew up in, it's a lot more conservative. And, you know, that was more banging drums. Whenever bombs started falling, it was more banging drums about doing the right thing towards other people's heathens, right? I mean, it was kind of weird and bizarre and an ugly thing to grow up in. So I think using that as a backdrop, again, for an international audience, because we're not just Joyner's not like a yes. local hip hop artist, yes. right? He's not an unknown.
Yes. And
like
he's definitely not
he's a Grammy
to
nominated hip hop
specifically either. Nobody yeah. in the world needs to know about St. Peter's.
We're the only people, you know. Bishop McManus is literally the only person in the world talking about like the backdrop, right? Because it's you're talking about a Grammy nominated hip hop artist that we should be proud of. Not only came from the city of Worcester, came from Maine South, grew up during a period of time that you could argue during his youth was when we peaked violent crime in Maine South, and I'm sure I don't know him well enough or really at all to but I'm going to guess probably lost a few people along the way, and it's probably as a young person had that conversation with himself or whatever higher power he believes in, whether
yes.
he does is
yes.
man, this seems really unfair. There are some downright atrocious people that seem to keep us skirting by, and yet here we are holding the bag on loss. And I think that's a fair question to ask a higher power.
I think it's just a question of, is this the right, you know, if you're sitting there, I mean, again, if you're sitting there carrying the bottle of alcohol around the church, the priest or the usher or whatever is going to come up to you and be like,
please
knock it off.
Yeah.
Right. But if you talk to that usher an hour after mass and you're like, hey, you want to get a beer? They're going to be like, of course I want to get a beer.
Mm-hmm.
Because the place to have the beer is the bar down the street,
yeah.
not in the middle of the church.
Yep.
Similar kind of a deal. Like I said, all I want is, here's what I want whenever they do the remix version of it, or Weird Al does his parody version of
yeah.
Devil's Work. I want there to be this part, maybe the bridge, maybe some chunk of the song when it gets a little bit more devout or a little bit more thoughtful, where he just takes the hat off as this gesture of like, now I'm going to be, you know, devout for a moment. And then maybe he argues himself, Hamlet, like back into being frustrated with God and puts the hat back on as a gesture of like, no, I'm not going to take the hat off in your house, Lord. I'm not going to do it. Like, I just want there to be some acknowledgement in the video that that this hat is like a crazy thing.
You know what I want to see happen is next time Joyner comes around locally to tour, even if it's down Providence or Boston, I hope that Monsignor Scollins, Bishop McManus, Rabbi Fogelman, and the imam whose name I'm not going to ruin, and I apologize for not remembering it. I hope they all go along for the ride, get backstage passes, and are shown the time of their life, because those are four guys that could use a little bit of hip-hop in their lives. And
Monsignor Scone would actually be pretty fun in that scenario.
He would be fantastic in that scenario.
He wouldn't be into it. He would just be like, listen, I'm like 80
yeah,
years old.
We could get him into it. I know.
He'd go to sleep at 4 o'clock in the afternoon.
No, we could get him into it, and I think I think it would be good for all of them. It would be a healthy night for all of them.
Hey, Brendan Melikan, here's an essay by Tyler Cowan, Forget Robots, the Breakthrough Technology Will Be in Your Car. Did you read this essay?
I did not.
He writes, over the next 20 years, what will be the most unexpectedly transformative technology? And he thinks the answer is the automobile, but not self-driving vehicles. Ride-sharing has been the biggest technological boost to my standard of living since the smartphone, and the service benefits both drivers and non-drivers. And most people have still not even started using ride-sharing, so there's plenty of room for the market to grow. And then he says, another reality of the contemporary automobile is that Tesla has managed to rethink the entire design. The dashboard and interior are reconfigured. The drive is electric. Software is far more prominent and integrated into the design. Voice recognition operates many systems, and there are self-driving features too. Whether or not you think Tesla as a company will succeed, its design work has shown how much room there is for improvement.
Yeah.
And I'm kind of – this idea that, like, the next smartphone will be radical car changes
–
this does not feel like an accurate argument to me.
You're not a driver, though.
You know what, though? I feel like I have driven a bunch of different cars.
Sure.
I drive cars on a regular basis. I don't drive, like, a lot of sports cars.
Mm-hmm.
I've driven some electric cars.
You ever drive a Tesla?
I have driven a Tesla.
Yeah.
I've driven some crappy cars. I would rather drive a Tesla than the other cars.
Yeah.
It's nicer. It has a little thing that tells me if I'm going to ram into somebody. That's
mm-hmm.
pretty good. But I don't feel it's, like, the difference between a BlackBerry and an iPhone, driving an old beat-up, you know,
the
Ford versus a Tesla.
Newer Teslas with autopilot, and especially the ones that go like 10 billion miles per hour and feel like you're in a rocket ship.
I never could get the autopilot turned on.
It's, yeah, no, it's absurd, Mike. I mean, it is like driving a rocket ship. That's the speed at which they accelerate.
It's like driving a cartoon car. That was my feeling.
Yeah.
Because it just like, yeah, it makes no sound as it gets faster. It just goes as fast as you want, as fast as you need it to.
The other thing that is, that I found too, there's something about, It was weird to me at first, the first time I saw like the big, the oversized iPhone that they use for a dashboard in a Tesla.
Right.
I can't remember which manufacturer it was, but it might have been Toyota or Volvo. I don't know why they're both in my head, but at Google I.O. This past week, a bunch of auto manufacturers are announcing their intent to go all in with Android Auto as being like the, not just like the media center, but the brain for the car.
Right.
And they're moving to displays like that. I think when you start merging that self-driving function along with ride sharing, along with removing all of the things that we think make a car, like knobs and buttons everywhere,
yes.
and it just kind of does what it needs to, it does kind of take on that life of a smartphone in the same way that, like, you know, you can use a smartphone, like my mom uses her smartphone the way that she uses her house phone, right? Like, she makes phone calls on it and whatnot. I'm getting to the point where, like, my phone, I'm just talking to it throughout the day. Like, it doesn't come out of my pocket. Like, it's, you know,
I never got into that. One of my housemates talks to, says, hey, Google, or whatever all the time.
I mean,
never could get into
it. And I do it through my headphones, so other people aren't hearing it. It's like, I'm just having, and Android Assistant is just getting weird and creepy in the things that it can do. The next generation of it, it's conversational. Like, the whole, hey, Google thing goes out the window, and you can just have an ongoing conversation with it. There's, I would be curious to see what got him thinking about this, but there were, I was watching an interview recently with a guy from MIT, I think he's MIT, Harvard, young dude, Russian guy, that is somewhere between theorist and engineer, and that's a lot of his focus is on cars and automation and whatnot. His whole thing is, like, you know, his personal work is basically creating AI that's similar to the movie Her, where, like, you can have, like, an actual relationship with your yes. technology. And that's, like, that's kind of like where Google Assistant is starting to head. I'll be curious to see how Siri, like Apple, amps things up along that front. But I do think cars in particular, we have a very intimate relationship with cars. And while we could be viewing ourselves as heading towards, like, a post-car sort of society, you know, cities are being rethought around walking, pedestrians, mixed-use transportation and whatnot. Especially for distance, there still is that intimate relationship with cars. And if you can rethink the way we both get them around and interact with them, yeah, there's some real potential there for stuff.
I guess he's making an accurate point too, that, like, at least as far as user experience goes, the robot car is not necessarily going to be a big miracle. Like, economically, it's going to be a huge change to things, but, like, as far as user experience goes, it's not going to be that much different from, like, an Uber. Like, yeah. Or a cab.
Maybe.
A cab is a self-driving car.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it's going to be in some ways different than riding in a cab, obviously, but in some ways it's going to be, you know, 90% of it is,
I guess,
riding in a cab.
And the way I look at it, I have looked at it for myself anyways, and I couldn't afford a Tesla, but, like, my limited experience with them relative to what I do drive. So, like, I drive a 20-year-old Jeep Wrangler that's a standard, right? So, like, I couldn't be any more hands-on.
I'm putting this article here just to get out of my way. You don't have to read
I couldn't be any more hands-on with my car if I tried, right? Like, things are, at least three different things break a day that I have to fix myself. You know, it was just yesterday replacing a multifunction switch because my turn signals decided that they meant to turn on the high beams, and that's really obnoxious when you're driving at light and you go to turn right and suddenly you just blinded the person coming at you. But so, like, I'm constantly fixing things. It's a standard.
Your wheels are falling off.
My wheel fell off a couple weeks back.
As we know.
It's like, but then you hop in a Tesla and it's like you kind of don't have to do anything. You just have to show up. You just need to be there, and that just being present thing. And I'm not saying you should be ignoring everything that's going on around you, but the amount of effort that's taken off of your back by the autopilot, along with all that data just being in front of you when you do need to see what's happening around you, or I don't know. It's like a smartphone. If you're using it to its full extent. Like, if you want, like, I get weirded out by people who are casual users of computers now. Like, why do you have a computer? Like, if all you're doing is watching YouTube videos and checking your Facebook feed and you use a computer, like, I run most of my business off of my phone. Like, I don't use a computer for anything other than, like, the stuff that I need multiple displays in front of me for, with, like, a 9 million tab spreadsheet, you know, package or whatnot. I feel like that's where cars are headed, is it's just taking things off of one plate and allowing you to cherry pick how you want to be taking some of that time back.
You know, Brendan, I have here another article. This is an interesting interview with the journalist Adam Minter, who wrote the book Junkyard Planet and a forthcoming book called Secondhand. And he makes a point that I think ties to our recycling discussions. He says, I slowly began to understand that people in consumption-based societies assemble their identities via stuff mm-hmm. and become very emotional when those identities and that stuff is discarded in ways that don't match their values.
Right.
Over the years, I've come to the conclusion that consumers actually care much more about how their stuff is discarded than how it is manufactured, which I think helps explain why our discussions around trash and recycling in Worcester have such an emotional component.
Yeah.
That whenever we say, oh, this trash idea is good or this trash idea is bad, people get their hackles up in a way that they don't if you say, you know, hey, we're going to try there's a better kind of a concrete or this old kind of concrete we used to use is actually bad.
I think as you mentioned when we were talking about this before the show, it also maybe explains the nonsense of Marie Kondo. Or is it a Kondo? Is
that it's a, not nonsense, but it's animism.
It is total nonsense.
It's animism.
Well, that's what it is, and that's why it's nonsense.
Right, like this article that I printed out.
You shouldn't be thanking your books for their service. Like, you should acknowledge that it's just pulp.
That's probably so, but I do. I mean, you do sort of like have this article that you printed out at home, and you're like, this is kind of like a living being. It's not, but some part of my mind thinks that it is. So maybe part of the reason I have with discarding it is because I'm just like, I can't just like abandon my friend, but I can say thank you for your service, print out, and then I feel a little bit better about sending it on its way. And especially if I'm recycling it and it's like a nice recycling thing and I know that it's going to be well cared for and the recycling guys like have really cool shoes or whatever, you know, the recycling plant is a very beautiful place for it to go and like live out its post-consumer life.
Yeah, but you know, you're right. And it's also exactly what's genius about this piece, though, is we got it all backwards. And it's whether it's materialism or consumerism are the things that have helped us get it backwards. We couldn't care less about the people who are actually involved with the making of our stuff.
Yes.
You know, the toddlers that are making our iPhones for us.
They're doing great work.
They're fantastic.
I actually do care. Good job, toddlers.
I mean, we make sure we go out of our way to make sure that iPhone gets a proper smartphone burial. But we think not of the 5-year-old that throws himself off the top of the Foxconn building because they just can't handle assembling anymore. Any more iPhones. That's a really bizarre place for us to be, that we care so much about our stuff. And I care about my stuff too, so I'm guilty as charged, and I'm pointing this finger right at myself. But that is a bizarro universe place for us to be when we don't think at all about where our stuff comes from, but where it ends up actually matters to us.
You know, speaking of the Boondock Saints, you had mentioned that there's also a Fight Club angle to all of this, the I'm not my khakis thing.
Yeah.
And of course, I am my khakis.
You are, and you look fantastic.
I mean, I have no separate stable self, as the Buddha would tell me. So honestly, my khakis are there. The fact of me having bought them is as much a part of me as anything else. And especially Adam Minter would think I'm the way that I dispose of my khakis.
Yeah.
Did you know that Thomas White at Assumption has released the quarterly Worcester Economic Index?
I did not.
I never saw this before. Did you ever see this before?
Yeah.
He writes, he's been doing this for years. He writes, economic activity in the greater Worcester area slowed during the first quarter of 2019. According to the Worcester Economic Index, since December, the WEI has increased at a 0.1% annualized rate, which falls short of the revised 1.4% rate for the fourth quarter of 2018. The Worcester Economic Index is estimated using Bureau of Labor Statistics employment and unemployment data for the greater Worcester area, the NECTA. Mm-hmm. According to the BLS current population survey of households, almost 3,000 more people had jobs in March 2019 than March 2018, and unemployment fell from 4% to 3.5%. However, the BLS payroll survey estimates that the number of jobs in the region actually declined by 4,600 since March 2018. The seeming contradiction of the employment estimates between the two surveys is the result of different sampling populations and employment definitions. And I tried to figure out how he calculated this. I read a bunch of stuff. There's no article in the popular press that I believe the writer understands how he calculates this, because they never even attempt to explain it. They just say, oh, it's a thing that he comes up with. I think it's basically, I would say it's basically the average of two or three measures of unemployment in the metro area. It is not the average. Mm-hmm. It is more complicated mathematically than that. But as far as the layman is concerned, it's the average unemployment.
What's interesting, though, is that I saw nothing mentioning this piece that was not negative. It seemed like the salty folks hopped all over this as like, oh, look, you know, Worcester's booming, Worcester Renaissance, we lost 4,600 jobs. I didn't see your mention of that is actually that we actually saw a decrease in unemployment is the first that I saw of the flip side of that, which seems to be more positive.
Yeah, I mean, this is he also notes, which none of the cranky people are going to say, that they always revise these statistics. So these are the preliminary statistics, and they always, 3 months down the road, have better numbers and put out a revised number. And then that 0.5%, it could be 0.5% higher. It could be down to 3% for all we know. This is just the guesstimate.
Yeah.
You know, I mention this because Brent crude oil is $70 a barrel, down 0.5% on the week. Bitcoin is $6,200, up 11% on the week and down only 28% on the year. Bitcoin, bro, what is up with you?
Making a comeback.
It's making a comeback. Don't call it a comeback. Actually, it is definitely a comeback.
It's been here for years.
No, not that long. Boy, thanks for watching this show. This is a show about Worcester, but we haven't talked that much about Worcester. How do you feel about Worcester this week?
I feel fantastic.
We do got to get Katie.
I feel better about Denver, though. They just decriminalized mushrooms.
We do got to get Katie Burt to write an article about Worcester and grief. Because I feel like a lot of these changes in Worcester, we forget about the grief component, where it's like, maybe you're improving parts of the city. You're turning a vacant lot into a baseball field or whatever. You're paving Paradise and putting up a parking lot, whatever it is. But there's like an aspect of grief involved with like, all right, like objectively, I would rather have that baseball stadium than that vacant lot, but there's still a loss associated with that. And
yes.
If you feel like you can't acknowledge it, then it just comes out in unhealthy ways.
It does.
Like with Tony Stark.
We need better. We need to learn to cope with our grief
or maybe
better
with Steve
as a
Rogers.
Species or as a society. Other societies do it better than us, but yeah.
This is your show. This is the show about grief.
Did you just give away Endgame spoilers?
What, that Steve Rogers feels grief in Endgame? Doesn't he always feel grief, or Tony Stark, or somebody? Steve Rogers
I feel
is
like
dead
you
the whole time.
I think
the one thing that I know is that Steve Rogers has been dead
slid
the whole time.
In an Endgame spoiler.
I don't know. I mean, I haven't even seen it. I have no idea what happens in this movie. A billion things happen. Everything I say is going to be a spoiler. Thanks for watching the 508 show. Thanks for listening. Gabby, you're the best. Stay strong. Talk to you next week.